destruction to function. Justice for the human family, we demand it. Justice, truth, freedom, equality's a must. Us decolonization of the planet, so bust this. People be the power, now we build the justice. Pointing at system divinations, how we build the justice. Welcome to Planet to the podcast, build the justice. Build the justice, build the justice. Build is to add on or do away with justice.
Welcome to Building Justice, a podcast by Sacramento State Center on Race, Immigration, and Social Justice. We explore critical issues affecting our communities with the hopes of creating a healthier and more just world. In the last episode of Season 2 of Building Justice, we featured an episode around campus policing, where we discussed alternatives to policing, and today's podcast widens that scope, where we discuss reimagining public safety. I'm Dr. Corrine McIntosh Sacco, a Sac State alumna, licensed psychologist, and president of the Sacramento Valley Psychological Association. And I'm here with filmmaker Matthew Solomon. Matthew was born and raised in Los Angeles and has been in the entertainment business for most of his adult life, first in music and then as an award-winning writer and director. His passion for people, equity, and social justice led him to work as a consultant for organizations needing help with conflict resolution and partnership building. During the pandemic, he returned to school to obtain a master's degree in public administration so that he could have more of an impact in helping to create communities that work for everyone. His course of study involved a deep dive into understanding policing, the carceral system, and public safety. His film, Reimagining Safety, is a documentary that looks at how policing and incarceration create more harm than good, why the system persists, and what changes can be made to make everyone safe. Today, we'll be talking with Matthew about his documentary and our upcoming community impact screening of the documentary held on the Sacramento State University campus on Friday, September 22nd, to help Sacramento reimagine public safety. Thanks for joining me today, Matthew, and thank you for creating this powerful film.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to having this conversation and to the screening we have coming up.
Yeah. How did Reimagining Safety come to be?
Oh, well. Well, it's kind of a, I mean, it's really like an intersection of all my life experiences. So I'll try and keep it short because I just turned 50 and it's a lot of ground to cover. But basically, like you said, I grew up in LA, born and raised. I had what I later found was a very unique experience where I went to very integrated schools. And so my friends were every race, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation. And so as a cis hetero white male, I observed at an early age that I had different experiences than my friends, you know, my Black friends in particular. And so that kind of stayed with me through school. And in the early 90s, when I graduated high school, I went to the University of Southern California School of Music. And so I was a music student there. And while I was there, I was taking sociology and anthropology courses because I was really fascinated. Well, I had to take them, but I became really fascinated with societies, you know, and why people believe what people do, why cities and governments and communities are set up the way they are, and why we have the problems that we do. And we were literally learning about systemic racism at the same time as the Rodney King beating, and then the LA riots, and then the OJ Simpson trial. And so all of these, you know, big like cultural events were happening at the same time. And so, you know, that stuck with me. And I went into music, as you were saying, and I was a professional musician. I got into filmmaking. And then in, I forget the exact year, I think it was 2014 when Trayvon Martin was murdered. You know, it was like so reminiscent of Rodney King because here was this horrible murder that was caught on, you know, on audio recording. And the murderer, George Zimmerman, got off, you know, and then the Black Lives Matter movement started. And then there was, you know, Michael Brown and, you know, all these other people who were being murdered by the police caught on camera. And you know, for me, it was like, wow, we're still doing this. And in my mind, because I was also doing, I was always interested in personal development. So I was always in seminars and taking courses and interested in communication and relationships and how to be a better, you know, person and a partner and citizen of the world. And, you know, it occurred to me that, you know, in my training, we all have our own unique lived experiences and our own points of view of how we see people in the world based on those experiences. And so I believed that the more that people understood that, you know, generally speaking, the Black experience in relation to police was very different than mine as a white male, and that there was a relationship between, you know, police violence and people seeing, being socialized to see Black people as more criminal or more violent or more whatever, that if people understood this, that we would all be on board, you know, for change. And the frustrating thing was when we got to 2020 with, you know, COVID first and then the, you know, murder of George Floyd, that that wasn't the case. However, people, after seeing the murder of George Floyd, you know, there was a big worldwide, you know, support for making changes to those systems and calling out the violence and the anti-Blackness, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And so it was another moment of me thinking, wow, we're still doing this. And at that point, I chose to go back to school. And I figured I was done with the entertainment business. I had been making films, you know, while doing personal development, while doing conflict resolution. And I was like, you know what, I need to, you know, at this point in my life, use my privilege and my access to help support change. And so I thought I would get into government or politics or policy or something. And as I was going through my master's program in public administration, I was applying all of that coursework around sustainability and communities and transformative leadership and things like that to the issues with policing and incarceration. And so what I was finding on the academic side was there were academic resources for like showing how policing and incarceration cause harm, especially to underserved communities and Black and brown communities, and unhoused communities. You know, there was a lot of research on that, but not a lot on what the alternatives could be. And so I started looking, well, what are the alternatives? And a classmate directed me to Marianne Caba's We Do This Till We Free Us. And I had already read Angela Davis's Are Prisons Obsolete? And so I was finding this, you know, alternatives that were humane and equitable and made a lot of sense. And when it came time to do my final thesis, I thought I was going to write a paper, but one of my academic advisors was like, we know you can write a paper, but we also know that you make movies and you're creative. Why don't you do a film? Why don't you do a documentary? And I'm like, that's a lot of work. And she was like, well, that's okay. You know, and she was like, look, it could be 10 or 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be like a long thing. And I was like, I can't cover this in 10 to 15 minutes. And literally she was like, well, go ahead and do it anyway. And so luckily I did. And I started finding people to interview and I started putting it together and it became, you know, reimagining safety. And that's kind of how all of this came about.
You feature news footage from some of the biggest turning point moments that we've seen in quite some time, including the murder of George Floyd in 2020, which, as you said, reignited and reinvigorated conversations around police reform and abolition in the United States. And you weave this footage around interviews with a lot of incredible voices, such as USC law professor Dr. Jody Armour, sociologist Nikki Black, Brooklyn College professor Alex Vitale, Dr. L. Jones, and Los Angeles District Attorney George Gaskin. Why was it important to you to create this film and highlight these conversations?
Well, I think, you know, going into it, because this was an academic, it started as an academic project, it was very important to have citable, reputable sources. And I wanted to, like, I could have just done a film with activists, But then people would say, oh, it's just a bunch of activists. But I knew that if I could back it up with academics like Alex Vitale, you know, who's been involved with worked with law enforcement for 30 something years. He wrote a book called The End of Policing. And I had been citing, like, he wrote a paper. I forget the title of it, but it dealt with the criminalizing of homelessness in Los Angeles. Safe Cities Initiative, I believe it was called. But anyway, I had been citing his papers. And so I had reached out to him and he said yes. And then he connected me with Dr. Jody Armour at USC. And Dr. Armour connected me with George Gascon, who's the, you know, LA County District Attorney. And so, like, that cycle was kind of complete. I knew I did want activist voices, but I also wanted a prosecutor or prosecutors, because they have a very influential role in what happens to somebody who is alleged to have committed a crime and or, you know, committed, you know, I'm drawing a blank, you know, found guilty of committing a crime. So they're very influential in that role. Nikki Black, we're in a couple different communities together around anti-racism and art and culture. Like, she's an award-winning slam poet in addition to being a sociologist and just like this really amazing person. So, you know, I knew I wanted her in the film and she said yes. I wanted somebody to speak to the law enforcement perspective. And George Gascon, in addition to being the district attorney of Los Angeles, was a police officer for 40 years in Los Angeles and San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Mesa, Arizona. And then Hadia Kennedy, who was with LAPD for 11 years, I met her through Senate Debremont, also known as Mr. Checkpoint, who I had interviewed. And he's somebody who follows the police and films them regularly. And then Jose Gutierrez, I wanted somebody to speak to mental health and the impact of that and what we could do from a mental health perspective. And so I was connected to Jose Gutierrez, who grew up in LA County, and, you know, he's in San Pedro right now, and like, awesome guy. And then L. Jones is a professor in Halifax, Nova Scotia, who I was, you know, introduced to through actually somebody who has a podcast in Toronto, Canada, that I had been on his show before. And he was like, oh, you should talk to L. Jones. And she's, you know, she's worked in prisons since she was 14. Her father was an activist. She's a professor in Halifax. And she co-wrote a 200-page report that was commissioned by Halifax on defunding the police. You know, what would it mean to do that? How would we do that? What would be the, you know, how do you approach that? What would be the benefits? And so she actually had done this research, and there was this report where it was like, wow, this exists. And so that's kind of how it all came together.
You've been traveling all across the country showcasing this film and having discussions about its message. How's the film being received, and what do those conversations sound like?
Yeah, I mean, overwhelmingly positive. You know, most of the, you know, we've either been doing film festival screenings or community impact screenings. Sometimes they're the same. We're going to be at the Lost River Film Festival in San Marcos, Texas, in October. And that festival, there's a huge activist community. And so in addition to the screening, there's going to be a huge panel afterwards. But basically, you know, I'm connecting with a lot of local organizations who are interested in the message and bringing people together and having panels that support the specific communities. And so overwhelmingly, it's been positive. And what I'm excited about with Sacramento is, you know, the Sacramento Psychological Association, this is the first mental health organization that's reached out. Like, you know, the other groups have all been social justice, you know, criminal, prison reform, criminal justice, you know, that sort of thing. And so this is actually, you know, hosted by like the primary, host, you all, you know, it's coming from the mental health perspective. So it's really, you know, I'm really grateful with, you know, my intention of having this film represent a bunch of, you know, several varying perspectives, all leading toward the same thing. Like, how do we have people be safe and cared for and supported and resourced from all these various perspectives? And then here we are in Sacramento, you know, coming at it, originating from the mental health perspective, which is really awesome.
Yeah. Now, in addition to the many roles that I have, I also am a community mental health advocate. And I don't know about you, but I know when I've been advocating for systems change or confronting those in positions of power to allocate budget funds and create policies that can increase care and decrease incarceration or interactions with police, I've been met with a continuum of energy ranging from detachment, disinterest, disdain, and downright hostility. It seems that there's an over-identification with these symptoms, that individuals have their identities entwined in these systems, and they take great offense to being challenged. And then we see governance out of emotion rather than governance based on data. I see this as one of the reasons why the system of policing and incarceration persists. What else do you see as reasons for the system persisting?
Well, there's a number of things. I mean, you know, the first thing that comes to mind with what you shared is, you know, we're socialized into a context of punishment. You know, we're very, and actually D.A. Gascon talks about this in the film. A couple other people do too, but basically, you know, our go-to for dealing with problems or dealing with people who are having problems or challenges is punishment. You know, we need to lock them up. We need to take something away. We need to, you know, put people in a corner. What, you know, whatever it is, it's all punishment is like the first solution that comes to mind for a lot of us. And it's really hard to get away from that. Like, if, you know, if something happens, the, you know, trash can gets knocked over, or somebody parks, you know, messed up in front of somebody's house, like the first thing is, oh, I want to call the cops, or, oh, they should be ashamed of themselves, or I'm going to, you know, leave a nasty note or whatever, you know, to punish that person. So that's one of the things is that our go-to is punishment. You know, the other thing is that along with the punishment is there's an immense amount of propaganda, or as they say, you know, copaganda, that leads us to believe that the only solution to most of our problems is to have armed police officers show up and harass people, clear people, arrest people, intimidate people, you know, and then lock them up or take them away or something. And so, you know, it's really part of our culture at this point, our collective culture, that we believe that these are the only ways to deal with people is punishment and, you know, policing and incarceration. And so, you know, what this film does and what a lot of people in the work are doing is showing, no, like when people are cared for and resourced, crime goes down because there's no need for it. You know, when people are met with respect and dignity, the likelihood, you know, coming from a conflict resolution background, like I watch all this stuff and all I see is escalation. You know, police aren't trained. There was this statistic I came across where, on the average, police departments across the country in their police academies spend 60 hours on firearms training, you know, shooting guns, and only 8 hours on de-escalation. And that de-escalation usually comes towards the end when they're doing, you know, role-playing activities and, you know, have scenarios where they show up and they're supposed to talk to people. And so they're not really taught or trained in how to deal with people.
Yeah. We should think about public safety the way we think about public health, that, you know, no one would suggest that hospitals alone can keep a population healthy, that no matter how well run that hospital might be, you know, a healthy community needs neighborhood clinics, health education, parks, environments free of toxins, government policies that protect the public during health emergencies, and so much more. That just as health isn't just about hospitals, safety isn't just about police. You know, here in Sacramento, we have a number of awesome community experts already doing some of this work. We have Decarcerate Sacramento, a group that works to decrease jail populations, prevent jail expansions, and shift county funds away from policing and toward community-based care. We have Anti-Police Terror Project, a Black-led and multiracial coalition that works to eradicate police terror from our communities. And Mental Health First is a project of Anti-Police Terror Project that features mobile peer support, de-escalation assistance, and other life-affirming interventions to interrupt the need for law enforcement and mental health crisis first response. Also, Sac State's new president, Dr. Luke Wood, has committed resources to hire 7 additional counselors and other individuals trained in social work in the campus safety office. What other kinds of policing alternatives and solutions have you learned of in your work with this film?
It's interesting. So like every time I go to a different city, I learn more about like what those communities are doing. In the film, you know, we talk about the CAHOOTS program in Eugene, Oregon, the STAR program in Denver, Colorado, and then there's another program in Houston, Texas. And so all of those, CAHOOTS and STAR in particular, are teams of, you know, mental health professionals, social workers, that teams that respond to calls that are not violent. You know, so not the, you call 911, they divert the call if it's not like a violent thing that's happening. If it's a, you know, mental health wellness check, something like that, they divert it to, you know, these teams, and then they go out and they, you know, deal with the situation. And with CAHOOTS and STAR, neither have called for armed police backup, and they're saving their cities millions of dollars. I think it was $8.7 million that CAHOOTS saves Eugene, Oregon annually by having them show up and not the police. And so, you know, I know we were, there was a, I think it was the Circle program here in LA. I haven't seen any data on that yet, but that was something that they were using here in Los Angeles to deal with unhoused folks, you know, because they were doing all of these like sweeps during the pandemic, where, you know, all these communities, tent communities popped up in like Echo Park and Malibu and all of that, and Venice Beach. And then, you know, one day the sheriffs or LAPD would show up and they would just, you know, kick everybody out, which is, you know, you're uproot. It's interesting. I haven't talked about this yet because this is like really new. A couple weeks ago, I volunteered at an event in Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And, you know, I spent the whole day down there. And, you know, the people there, like, that's their community. You know, just because they're living in tents or, you know, whatever shelters they're in, that's where they live. And so, you know, a lot of politicians talk about, oh, we'll just put them on a bus and drive them out to Santa Clarita, which is, you know, miles away out in the, you know, but, you know, if you're living in a certain area and you have your friends, your community, you know where your resources are, people know how to find you to bring you food and things like that. And then all of a sudden you're, you know, forced onto a bus and driven out to wherever. And now you got to be in this other area. Like that, there's a lot of harm that's caused, you know, mentally and emotionally by doing that to people versus, you know, we could build housing. I see condos and, you know, expensive apartment buildings popping up all over in areas that 10, 15 years ago, nobody wanted to live in, you know, but you could house people and it would be cheaper to house people and give them resources to, you know, employment, education, and, you know, healthcare and mental health services. And this is talked about in the film, like it's almost half the price, half the cost to do that versus keeping, you know, incarcerating people, which is the go-to.
So much trauma could be avoided.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we just really built up and supported these systems of care. Yeah, you and I connected through some of my community organizing work. You reached out to inquire if there might be any interest in hosting a community impact screening here in Sacramento. And it's been incredible to just see the large outpouring of support from community partners to make this event happen. We'll be holding our community impact screening of Reimagining Safety on Friday, September 22nd at 4 p.m. The event is free and seating is limited, so you must reserve your seat at www.sacramentovalleypsychologist.com, and we'll put a link in the show notes. The event is sponsored by the Sacramento Valley Psychological Association, Public Health Advocates, the Sacramento chapter of the California Faculty Association, Sacramento City Council member Katie Valenzuela, and Sacramento State's Department of Political Science. We will screen the film in the Hind Auditorium, located in Sacramento State's University Union, and we will have a panel after the screening featuring Matthew and some of those local community experts I referenced earlier. Ryan McClinton from Public Health Advocates First Response Transformation Campaign, Mac from Decarcerate Sacramento, Keon Bliss from Anti-Police Terror Project, and Michael Lee Chang, a Sac State student advocate. Matthew, what are you hoping the Sacramento community takes away from the event?
Well, I mean, with all of this, it's always, my intention is to have there be a space for possibility, that there's something possible other than what we've been doing that would actually have a significant positive impact on the community. And so it's my desire and my intention that's what happens. And I know that with, the panelists that are assembled and the people that are interested and the people that are host the organizations that are hosting, that's the all the makings for all of that to take place. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Great. Do you have any final words for our listeners?
No, just thank you. I invite everybody to, visit our website, reimaginingsafetymovie.com, and you can watch the trailer, and there's links to the Sacramento screenings as well as our other screenings if you're not in Sacramento. And yeah, just I encourage people to think about like what are the things that we accept as true that may not be true, or there may be other alternatives. And what if we really cared about one another? I like to always pose that question. If we really cared about one another, what would we do? And to have that be an inquiry, that kind of carries you all, forward in your daily lives.
Well, that's great framing. Thank you so much for sharing this documentary and its message with us. It truly does bring a message of hope.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope our ongoing conversations spark understandings, empathies, and motivation to join the struggle for a better future for all. You just listened to the Building Justice podcast. The information contained in this podcast, including its title and description, represent the views and opinions of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the Sacramento State University, Chris J, and/or the Building Justice podcast community.
All the penalties and the rewards based on the actions. Now, time for building justice. Building justice. Time.